Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back in Leading Edge Medicine here with you. My name is Lynette, here with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. And your phone calls and your questions about your health and what's going on as we're aging. That's why we're here. Show sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics, of which we have three. We have one in Tacoma, one in Kirkland, and of course, our Linwood facility of Longevity Medical Clinics. And if you haven't become a patient, we invite you to come in. We have our health analysis, our free health analysis, which involves two simple tests, a blood test and an in-body test. And Dr. Umat, maybe you can give us a little bit more information on when somebody comes in, makes mm-hmm. that health analysis appointment, mm-hmm. and gets in for the two tests. What's going to happen?
You know, those two tests are literally a lot of information packed into two very small things. The first is a blood test. It's a finger prick test that tells us about your hemoglobin A1C. That's glycosylated hemoglobin that tells us what is the state of sugar in your blood over the last 3 month period, as opposed to a blood draw that tells us glucose at that point in time. So that gives us a look at the window of what's happening to you in 3 months. And the beauty about this is that high sugar concentrations over a period of time are dangerous for you, even if you're not diabetic. And if that number is rising, then we can tell you where you are, because you don't suddenly become diabetic one day. It is a continuum, and we tell you where you are in the continuum and what you can do to reverse that continuum and become normal and healthy again, because you can. So that is an important thing. And the second one is our in-body machine, where you basically stand on the machine and it tells you your weight. But much more than that, it tells you your muscle to fat ratio and where is the muscle mass, basically. So the beauty about it is that muscle is the currency of aging. And as we get older, we tend to lose muscle preferentially and we tend to gain body fat. So I have some patients that look wonderful, they're normal weight, but they have lost a lot of muscle mass and they are fat. We call them our skinny fat. And if the visceral fat level is high, which is the deep fatty tissue that surrounds your internal organs, then that is dangerous. It's pro-inflammatory. It increases risk for dementia, diabetes, degenerative joint disease, cancers, and that is what we're looking for. But again, these two tests are literally just a glimpse, but the important part is with the blood draw. So I encourage everybody to come in and look at these for sure, but it's the blood draw that will really get you more details of what you really want to know. So for $595, you can get a whole host of information, and that buys you 1 hour physician time. And there, your physician will not only just tell you about our program, but they will have had time to look over your test results before you come in and plan to tell you about them. But also they would have thought about how they can help you get better. And that's the beauty about the testing.
You can basically outline what it's going to take to get you where you want to be.
Yeah, and as we've been alluding to all morning today, it's the earlier you find out, the more you can do for yourself. And this is where technology is going today. We're not waiting for you to get a diagnosis and to be put on medications before you become proactive in prevention. If you believe that disease doesn't just happen. Like, yes, infections do suddenly happen. But if you believe that chronic disease kind of takes time and smolders and smolders and then becomes a medical diagnosis, which is what happens to diabetes and heart disease and so many chronic conditions like cancer, degenerative joint diseases, then you don't want to wait for the diagnosis and then try to do something to reverse it. You really want to know, where are you on the spectrum today? Are you really past the stage where you can reverse it or not? Because you can reverse it. We literally have a decade or longer sometimes when we can impact on this and make the rest of your life better. You know, Jerry, I met this wonderful gentleman yesterday. He's been a patient in our practice for 4 years, and he came because he listens to us on the radio show, and he says he trusts you, but he said that he was pretty good at his age, and he's over 70 now, but he has noticed a significant change even in the 4 years that he's been here. He said to me, I thought my diet was pretty good until I came here. And then I realized all the things that are not okay and all the things that I can do. He's lost fat. He's built muscle. His exercise capacity is improved. His thinking is better. His ability to move is better. His enjoyment in his life is better. And I did ask, and he has agreed to give us a testimonial.
Well, good.
So, you know, it's just nice to talk to him and to hear his positive journey. And I did mention, he's Dr. Brazel's patient, and I did mention to her and complimented her on taking such good care of him, because, you know, these are good things. This is so nice to hear. Hopefully maybe we'll bring him on our show one day and he can tell us his own journey.
Why not?
But, you know, I have patients like here that tell me that, they watched their parents get sick and they knew that they didn't want to age like their parents did. And in those days, we didn't realize that there was things we can do. But today we know that we don't have to age like that. And hence the word that you mentioned earlier, health span versus lifespan.
Yeah.
And hot span, right. Which is not a span.
Well, it's Dr. Mixon's span,
it's just
yes.
It's not one generally recognized as yet, but I'm cutting edge.
Mixon.
After all, my wife's hot span has been extended. You've seen my bride.
Yes, we have.
You know, even though she is now pushing 50, you'd swear that she is still a hot chick in
30.
Her 30s.
Yes, absolutely.
So, you know. But then we never let her age. You know, we started treating her in her late 20s, early 30s, and now she is pushing 50, and yet, you know, her endocrine support is still that of a girl in her late 20s to early 30s, and
well,
it shows.
And you know, over the years, I've realized that Asian women actually don't mind continuing their menstrual cycles.
No.
They think it's a sign of youth.
In China, it is considered a sign of youth and vitality.
Yeah.
You know, American women want to get rid of their periods as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
And Asian women would like them to hang on for as long as practical.
Yeah.
So it's a different perspective.
Yeah, different culture.
But there's so much that we can do, right, at longevity.
Absolutely.
And you know people, we know people. We've seen patients, and we would love to see you in one of our facilities in Lynnwood, Tacoma, and Kirkland. Make your appointment. Come in for that free health analysis. Take the blood draw as well and find out what's going on with your hormones. See if you're at risk for diabetes, heart disease, joint problems, heart issues, cancer, and so much more. Here is that number to call to make your appointment, and you can do that today. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Or you can go to our website, which is lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. And we hope to see you here at Longevity so that in 6 months or a year, you'll be telling us your story of how much better you feel, how much more energy you have. And Dr. Mixon, what do we want them to be feeling?
Stronger, faster, leaner, smarter, sexier, and happier.
That's right.
And hotter.
And hotter.
Absolutely.
The list increases.
Yes, it does.
Every few months.
He adds a new adjective there. 1-866-86-YOUNG.
Right. Why not?
866-86-YOUNG is the number to call. That's 866-86-YOUNG, or go online to lmclinic.com. We want to see you here. Okay, we've got another phone call. We are headed over to, let's go to Fran in Seattle. She wants to talk about something a little bit different. Good morning, Fran.
Hello, Fran.
Good morning. You guys are so funny. I just love your show. Anyway, I have a question. I've never done any cosmetic surgery or anything like that. I'm 67. Mm-hmm. My skin looks pretty good, but I'm starting to get those lines on the side of the mouth, and you know the skin under the neck is a little loose. And I was wondering, do they have any treatment in the clinic for that type of thing without having to do Botox or anything like that?
Yes, they do. The easiest thing, of course, is, you know, to see you. And the consultations are completely free. You're not committed to purchasing anything when you come in for a consultation. But you'll meet with one of the master aestheticians, and they can do a quick evaluation, and they can look at your skin. They can ask you what bothers you. They can take photographs, review those photographs with you, and then they can come up with a treatment plan. So if you're not wanting to use any toxin or any kind of filler, then there are other types of treatments we can offer you. So what happens with aging is, as you know, the skin becomes lax, the collagen is depleted, and the fat pads shift, and the muscle becomes atrophied. And hence, you see the signs of aging, which is, you know, the accentuation of the nasolabial fold, or the loss of fat mass on the cheekbones, the marionette lines, the perioral commissures, the preoral sulcus. So those all things, you know, the jowls, you know, they become more accentuated. And those things give away our age, even if we are trying to feel better on the inside. So a little bit of treatment for that is not a bad thing. And if you're not wanting toxins and fillers, then I would suggest that you start with simple things like chemical peels, microneedlings. We do microneedlings with exosomes, and we do microneedlings with hyaluronic acid fillers. We can also use platelet-rich plasma for you, which is basically your own growth factors. And then once you have seen what this can do, and then if you want to kind of gingerly go into the laser realm, then we can do the lasers with radio frequency. For that, I actually love our Potenza. It is a great machine which provides radio frequency therapy, and it basically allows us to penetrate the cream or the exosome or the hyaluronic acid which we're using, or your platelet-rich plasma, much deeper into the skin, and it helps with your own body to do its job with growth and stimulation of collagen formation. So the short answer is yes, there is a lot of non-surgical things that you can do. And the best way to go about it would be just to come in. There's no pressure for sales. They can just come and talk to you about and tell you about what they see and what options you have. The microneedling with exosomes is actually one of the newest things that they've added. And it basically is an extract of stem cells that helps with your own rejuvenation. And microneedling is not a pain. There's no downtime. We do numb you a little bit, so your skin will be numb so you don't feel the impact. But it basically stimulates your own body to bring more inflammatory cells in the area. We cause microtrauma to help with healing and rejuvenation. A very, very nice treatment. And then if you don't want to do that also, then the easiest thing and the non-painful thing is a hydrofacial. But the hydrofacial will not get rid of the lines. It'll just cleanse the skin. It'll be a gentle chemical peel. If you're wanting for the soft lines, then yes, there are things we can do. And the sooner you get started, the better off.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that helpful, Fran?
Awesome.
Yes.
And then, Fran, the other thing, too, I tell everybody is, you know, what kind of product you put on your face after a treatment is also very important. And paying attention to that and maybe investing in yourself a little bit, because it helps you. I think of this whole thing as an investment in yourself. And when you do get a treatment, if you put a good skincare product on top of the treatment that you've received, then it enhances and your treatment will last a little bit longer. So you'll see the impact of it for longer. And the girls can go through all of this and talk to you about it. Obviously, a good sunscreen is the basic minimum. So lots and lots of things we can talk about. Depends upon where you want to start and what you want to do. And so we do, you know, the best thing would be to come in for a consultation.
All right. Is that helpful, Fran? All right. Fran.
I think she went away.
Okay, she's gone. But Fran, here is the number to call. You can call that same phone number, 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. And when you call in, just tell them what you were telling us. You want to find a way to get rid of the fine lines, and they will set up a consultation for you. And you can find out what you can do. 866-86-YOUNG. All right. We are going to take another phone call before we go to break. Let's talk with, let's go to Mark in Olympia right now. Hi there, Mark, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Mark. Mark, speak to us.
Do we have Mark? There we go.
You don't have me?
Oh, we have
you now. Hi there, Mark. Welcome.
Oh, sorry. I'm on speakerphone, so... Anyway, I've been a long-time listener, enjoyed the show a great deal, and I'm a recent joiner of your program in Tacoma. Anyway, I recently got a continuous glucose monitor, and the numbers I'm getting are really bothering me. I haven't had a chance to talk to my doctor in Tacoma yet, but I'm getting high fasting numbers. I do intermittent fasting, and for example, I'm probably 14 hours without eating right now, and it's like 130. And last time I had a test, my last test at your clinic was 98. So I'm wondering what's normal, and are these monitors that accurate, or if maybe I have some kind of a chronic problem. It seems normally throughout the day, I'm like 110 to 130. And if I start walking and start doing some exercise, it just drops like a rock, down to 100 or less. So anyway, any ideas?
Oh,
yep. A whole lot of them.
Lots of good questions.
Yeah, but I see we're getting a symbol. We have to take a break. So, yeah. So sit tight. When we come back after this break, we will talk to you about your glucose monitoring and your exercise impact, etc.
So. All right. We will take a quick break, we'll be right back. And also, our phone lines are open for you and your questions at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Mark, you stay right there. We'll be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine.
Sound of your own wheels drive you crazy. Lighten up while you still can. Don't even try to understand.
All right, let's get back to
Mark.
Yes. Mark.
Okay, Mark. Leading Edge Medicine with the doctors. Let's talk about those continuous glucose monitors.
Yeah. The continuous glucose monitors as a group tend to be very good. Obviously, nothing created by human beings is perfect. And so you're going to get a lemon once in a while. That's just the real world.
Lemon once in a while. Seriously, Jerry?
Yes.
Maybe he wanted a lemon.
Well, maybe, but then he has to make lemonade out of it.
Yeah.
But the reality is that...
I've done that many times.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know about the particular device you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different brands. Most of them are pretty darn good. But like I said, once in a while, you'll get one that just doesn't work as well as they're supposed to.
Right. But then, Mark, here, you haven't told us what your hemoglobin A1C is, and that might be a good thing to know.
My numbers are really good.
Uh-huh. What is good?
I just had the Cleveland lab done. Triglycerides are 60. A1C was 5.2.
Okay, that's pretty good. Do you have your insulin there close to you?
Good.
Do you have your fasting insulin there?
The last time I had my labs done there, they didn't run my insulin, which was kind of my fasting insulin, which was kind of disturbing me.
Normally we do that.
Yeah, they'll pick it up next time. No worries.
Yeah, I think it must have been just an oversight. But
yeah.
Anyway,
the good news is that 5.2 tells us that your average sugars are in a very nice place. So, you know, that's good news. And you're right, exercise burns sugar very efficiently. Muscle is a high energy consumption tissue. Just by existing, muscle is burning calories 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And when you use the muscles, it goes into overdrive and really starts burning a lot of sugar. And so you'll see your glucose drop significantly when you go out and exercise.
And it's fast. I mean, it's just like in minutes.
Yes, absolutely. It is. Again, in order for those muscles to contract, they have to generate a lot of energy. And that burns sugar to produce that energy. So it's not a long, slow process. It's almost instantaneous. As soon as the muscles start to contract, blood sugar starts to drop.
And then also with the morning high levels, the smoggy effect may be playing a role over here with the longer period of hypoglycemia kicking in the hormones that basically cause him to go into hyperglycemia, which we do see in people, some of them sometimes when they use insulin, but maybe not.
What she's referring to is that in the night, when you're asleep, your metabolism slows to its lowest point of the 24-hour period. And, you know, you drift down into deep sleep. But then you need to wake up at some point. And your body has to start kind of revving the engine, getting you ready to wake up. And so your blood pressure starts to rise. Your blood sugar starts to rise. Your body just starts to crank everything faster. And that rise in sugar before you wake up is quite prominent in some people. It happens to everyone, but for many people, it's a very modest change. But some people get a real big boost. But that's part of what will wake you up and get your brain and your body moving again. So, you know, this is a... I'm sorry, what?
For me, it seems to be happening pretty strongly. So another interesting thing is that during the night, I can drop down below 50. In fact, my alarm went off a couple times and woke my wife up, which I regret. So,
okay.
So now I'm having to turn off my phone. But anyway, I guess I'm just worried because my numbers seem higher than they should be because I've been really watching what I eat.
But the reassuring point is that your A1C is only 5.2 because that says on average your sugars are in a very nice place.
Yeah. Okay, well, I've been reading up on this metabolism and how important it is to keep an, you know, be aware of it. And I have not always had a good diet. I've been a sugar eater most of my life. And I'm just wondering if maybe I've got pre-diabetes or who knows what's going on. It just seems
high. With an A1C of 5.2, you're not pre-diabetic. In fact, you're in a very, very nice place from a glucose standpoint. So I'm not in the least worried about that. Now,
okay, quit worrying then. Okay,
I don't have a metabolic problem. Yeah, your biggest issue at this point, it sounds like, is going to be to build more muscle mass. You know, you're going to need to monitor monitor your anabolic hormone load, your testosterone, your DHEA, and you know, get some good resistance training. Not just aerobics, not just walking or jogging slowly, but some actual pushing, pulling, lifting of heavier weights.
Yeah, I'm doing that, and I work out 2 to 3 times a week.
Good for you.
In the gym, doing weights. See, I'm 76.
Good.
And I have been building some muscle, but it's hard work. It's hard work. I mean, it doesn't come on quickly.
No,
and
I'm
eating a lot of protein.
All right.
And not like when I was younger. But anyway, so you don't think I have a problem?
Well, I mean, you're 76. Okay. That in and of itself is a problem.
I'm realizing that.
Yeah. You know, because at this age, I can pretty well predict your senescent cell load is going to be much higher than it used to be. And so you've got a percentage of your tissues that are refusing to work. They're basically senile, and they're just kind of sitting there, and they're kicking out anti-growth, anti-repair hormones that slow your repair, that slow your healing, that slow your production of new tissue. And so it's one of the things you might want to talk to your doctor about there in Tacoma.
Already did it.
Okay.
I've had two treatments on the senescent cell. What is it? The quercetin and
dasatinib.
The other one.
Yes.
That you take.
Yes.
Yeah,
dasatinib and quercetin. Good.
Done that twice, right. And I felt really good afterwards. And
he's already addressing those things for you, and that's great news.
Yes.
Because. Yeah. That's
well,
what we
I
want.
Knew about it from listening to the radio,
right.
So I asked about it.
Good. All right.
Okay.
Now, it sounds to me like you're doing reasonably well. What we need to do is just get you making as much lean tissue as we possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
So keep it up.
Well,
yeah.
I've never been a husky person, so I'm kind of the skinny type. So
that's all right.
Okay.
That's okay. Skinny people tend to live longer than muscular people.
Mm.
Yeah, okay, that's good. As long as it's
that's a
good
thing.
Solid.
Yeah, it's really kind of, I mean, at 6'4", I don't like objective reality all the time. There are times that, you know, I tell God, why did you have to do it this way? But tall people, for instance, tend to die younger than short people.
Oh, boy. Really? Wow.
Yeah. We tend to have more cardiovascular disease because greater height means we are fighting against gravity. And so we have to have higher blood pressures over time to pump that against gravity all the way up to our heads.
Mm.
And as a consequence, we tend to develop atherosclerotic heart disease at a younger age than shorter people.
Mm.
So,
wow. All right.
I recognize it as reality. I just don't have to like it.
Yes.
Then
we don't like it.
Right,
and then
exactly.
Long ago, the universe does not depend on my approval to exist.
It still goes. Oh.
Well,
hey, Mark,
I knew
thank
at
you.
Some point in my life, being short and skinny was going to come out and help me.
There you go.
You got it.
This is good. Oh, thank you for the call, Mark.
Just
I hope that was helpful.
Had to wait a long time.
All right. Take
that's
care, Mark.
Funny.
Oh, that's good.
Thanks for calling, Mark.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Okay. We have a few minutes here before we head to break. So let's take another phone call from Seattle this time. Anne, welcome to the show.
Hey. Good morning.
Good morning, Anne.
You, I hope the two of you are living beautiful and brilliant lives.
We are.
Yes.
And hopefully next weekend we will be actually on the internet, and you can watch us live next week instead of just listening
to us. Well, you can watch us. I can't actually see you, so it's not going to make much difference to me.
All right.
But that's okay. So I have a question. So I am 9 years out from some really rather brutal chemotherapy, you know, the kind where you just disrupt cell division and every dividing cell population in the body in the hopes that it will kill cancer cells preferentially.
Yes, they kill the cancer before it kills you.
Yeah, well, you know, they do an ejection fraction so they can figure out how much of this stuff they can give you without poisoning you. That kind of thing. Okay, so anyway, and I'm 9 years out from this, and about a year after the whole great unpleasantness, maybe a year and a half, I noticed that I could not learn new songs. And I, you know, am a performer. I learned boatloads of songs, and if they were in my performance repertoire before, I still have them, and I can reacquire them if I don't. Mm-hmm. If they weren't, I may have memorized them at some point, in my past, but I can't reacquire them.
Yeah.
And this was just like, you know, it's a skill. It's just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I began to notice was that my ability to remember specific vocabulary of, IUPAC nomenclature, which you wouldn't think anybody needs, but I need it because that's how I build molecular structures in my head. So it's a description that lets me see the molecules, but I no longer remember it very well.
Mm.
And just stuff like this, it's making me crazy. And so my brain, of course, wants to fight this loss. And this is where I have two questions. So the first question is, I spin into narratives occasionally. And they are usually about subjects that are mostly vastly irrelevant. I mean, I don't think most people around me care about the history of the colonization of the Pacific Islands, but I have a whole 20-minute narrative about it, and once it gets started, once it gets started, it's really hard to stop. And, okay. You know, I prefer to do it in front of a live person, and this morning I had spun into it again without quite being aware of it, and my poor partner got impatient. I don't blame him, and I'm sitting here thinking, no, my brain needs this activity. It needs it really badly. Mm-hmm. This is a narrative I learned when I was about 13 years old, and I can bring it up intact and reacquire it, and that struck me as significant. So the first question is, am I onto something, or should I just put this stuff back where it belongs and just forget about it?
Well, you don't want to forget any more than you have to. But tell you what, we are getting symbols saying we have to take a break. But you sit tight, and we will be right back, and we'll discuss memory processing, aging, and what sorts of things we can do about it, okay?
All right. You stay right there, Ann, and we will be right back with more Leading Edge Medicine. In the meantime, here's the number so that you can get into the call queue, and we can answer your questions as well. Dr. Mixon here today and Dr. Samira Umat. The number to call the studio is 1-800-465-8770, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat with Anne on the line from Seattle.
Yeah. Anne, it sounds to me like you've got a couple of things probably going on. And I have to say probably because I'm sitting here on the radio. I have no access to any cognitive or imaging studies. And, you know, I can tell you what usually happens.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, to some degree, if you had very intense chemotherapy for a prolonged period of time, you almost certainly develop some degree of what we refer to as chemo brain. Those toxins attack rapidly dividing cells faster than they do slowly dividing cells, which is why they tend to kill the cancers better than they kill the rest of us. But every cell that is dividing, even if it does so slowly, is going to be impacted to some degree. And those areas of the brain connected to creativity and to memory are the areas where we're making the most neuron connections in our lifespan. Mm. And they tend to be the ones that are impacting the most heavily by chemotherapy. Mm. And so almost everybody that has had extensive chemotherapy gets some degree of chemo brain, in which they just get some fuzzy thinking, they get memory lapses, they lose some of their skill sets.
Yeah.
And that's unavoidable by basically trying to poison the tumors, and we can't avoid poisoning some of your good cells in the process.
Right. I mean, the idea is to keep you alive. Unfortunately, it comes with its downsides.
Yes.
That's the stark change from chemotherapy versus immunotherapy, Jerry, where immunotherapy is targeting just a cell that is causing the cancer. But unfortunately, it's not, you know, that extensively available right now.
Right. Although that is where it's going.
That is the future. I mean, we started with melanoma therapy and we will continue, but and looking at blood cancers right now. But in your case,
We are where we are.
Yeah.
The other problem we've got is that with aging, the amygdala, the area of the brain that processes short to long-term memory, tends to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
And in people developing dementia, it shrinks much faster than in those of us that are normal but old. And as we age, there's always some loss of amygdala mass. One of the studies they actually do is MRIs of the brain and do volumetric studies to tell us how small that portion of the brain is becoming. And, you know, if they have a series, they can kind of track it over time.
Uh-huh.
and that is one of the indications of age-related cognitive decline. Mm. And we all develop some degree of age-related cognitive decline. You know, mm-hmm. Our brains are quite dynamic. They function at their fastest, sheer speed of processing, when we're about 17 years old.
Right.
And so we can handle a whole lot of new data coming in very quickly. And that's when we tend to be our most creative. You know, if you look at most genius level folks, they get most of their creativity before 30. And after 30, they tend to start refining the insights of their youth. And they still kind of start playing with the same stuff over and over and over and make fine refinements and changes to it. But the real insights usually come quite early in life when our brain is the fastest as a sheer processing machine. And as we age, different aspects of our brain go downhill at different speeds. One of the classic evidences that we are developing minimal cognitive impairment. Now, this is a cognitive impairment that is not yet dementia, but is at least moving in that direction, is when we find that our long-term memory is better than our short-term memory. We're better able to remember the things that we did and saw and experienced in our youth than we are the things that we're adding this week, this month, this year.
Yeah.
And so short-term memory tends to be the first thing to go with aging. So, interestingly enough, the single best intervention for that long-term versus short-term memory processing is working muscle, exercise. You know, there was a book back in 2014, I guess it was. It was Neil, what was Neil's last name? He's down at the Buck Institute at UCLA.
Bredesen.
Yeah. Dr. Bredesen, you know, did a fascinating study in a small number of people that were in early to moderate dementia. And he had a whole lot of interventions. One of them were, of course, the hormone interventions that we do. Another one was supplementation. And then the third one was physical exercise. And it turns out the single most important aspect in all of his interventions was the exercise. We now know that working muscle produces more than 600 different peptides, enzymes, hormones, and proteins that actually help us to grow new brain tissue and to make better connections between our neurons. So physical activity and actual working out to make as much muscle as we can, as frequently as we can, is one of the single most important things you can do to maintain your long-term memory.
Yeah.
Which I think is just kind of fascinating.
Yeah. That's Dale Bredesen.
I actually exercise between 35 and 45 minutes a day against resistance.
Good.
In fact, it's funny. I got one of these air resistance bikes that powers a fan, and I can get that thing going enough to really feel like I'm outside and actually blow my hair in the breeze.
Good for you.
Yes.
All right. So, look, I'll put my machine near yours, and you can blow my breeze while we're at it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have done that, but my inclination, and this is going to sound completely weird, but humor me on this, because my instinct, and it's rather desperate, is to want to somehow take that narrative that I know well, and which actually engages huge parts of my brain. I won't go into it because, you know, and to integrate dance with it, if I can. Just because then everything goes in the same direction, and I've added to my exercise program. I'm not going to replace the basic exercise.
No, you don't want to replace exercise.
I have kept the 100 pounds I lost off And my exercise is a
good
big
for you.
Part of it.
Good for you. Yes. Mm-hmm. You are a rarity, but I heartily approve. So
that's the first question. The second question is, the last time I had a 2-day neuropsych evaluation after an accident. This was almost 30 years ago, actually. Uh-huh. And on that set of tests, there were 3 of them that I scored 2 standard deviations or above the norm.
Good.
And and that's very nice and very happy. But if I were, for example, to take a long-term memory test or a short-term mm-hmm. memory test and come down to, say, maybe a quarter of a standard dev above the norm, that would look normal. But in me, that's a sizable loss, but I can't prove it.
Well, I agree. And that's really one of the long-term observations we've had about dementia is the smarter you start out in life, the less chance that you will become overtly demented, simply because you've got a lot more that you can lose before you fall into that inability to carry out the daily activities of living. You know, the definition of dementia is not how much you've lost. We do not count, don't count you as demented unless you are unable to carry out the normal activities of daily living. That is, feed yourself, dress yourself, get to the store and back and buy your own groceries and fix your own meals and so on.
Right. And so, all of this is complicated by the fact that I am nearly totally blind.
Yes.
So see what I'm saying? This is enormously frustrating because if I lose a daily living skill, I can't tell whether it's because I've lost what little I had of my eyesight over, the last 9 years. And so it's hard for me to tell.
And losing vision or losing hearing both accelerate decline in cognition.
Yeah. I've lost some of that too, though that's a little less obvious. But yeah. And, I don't want to get to the point where I like life. Thank you very much.
I like
my life the way it is. Thank you very much. And I don't want to lose, any more than I have. I kind of feel, people talk about brain exercise and I'm sitting here thinking, these particular, there's maybe 4 or 5 of these narrations. I just need to go through them in front of somebody like once every 2 months or so. Just.
All right. Yeah. Or go online and do them for the whole world.
It's not the same thing, unfortunately, but
hear
your point. Yeah. We have to take another break.
We've got 3 calls waiting, but
thank you for that insight. I did actually gain quite a bit from it, and I now understand a little bit more what's happening with these, and the amygdala especially is helpful.
Yeah,
so thank you very much.
You're welcome. Keep moving that brain as fast and far as you can, my dear. That's important.
Oh, believe me. Right. I'm trying. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you for the call, Ann. We're headed now to Whidbey Island, and we have Art on the line. Good morning, Art.
Good morning, Art.
Hello. Hello.
Hello. How can we help?
I have a question about cardioversion mid-May, I had a pacemaker inserted to keep my heartbeat 60 or above. And then in early August, I had cardioversion procedure. And I'm wondering if you could comment on the... I seem to feel a lot better after the cardioversion, but I'm wondering what the long-term outlook is with cardioversion. I've read that oftentimes it doesn't work long-term.
Right now, I'm presuming you had atrial fibrillation. Is that what they cardioverted you from? Okay.
He has a pacemaker, and then he has a fib, and then he had a cardioversion. Yeah.
And he probably had atrial fibrillation with a bradycardic response, which is why the pacemaker, and then the cardioversion to get him out of fibrillation. Yes. Statistically, the longer you've been in atrial fibrillation, the less successful cardioversions tend to be in the long haul. You know, there are people that get cardioverted and they'll stay in sinus rhythm for a matter of days or weeks, and then they flip right back into atrial fibrillation. So there are people that have been cardioverted several times.
Yeah.
And if that is happening, then probably the next thing to be considered for is something like a Mays procedure, in which they actually go into the heart and use microwave energy to disrupt the pathways of the fibrillation, so the electrical pathways are stopped and can only go by the approved paths.
Mm.
And that works the vast majority of times, even if the cardioversions don't hold. So I think the good news is you got your pacemaker, that kept your rate up.
Mm.
You've been cardioverted, now you feel better, and that's probably because your cardiac output has improved by 15 or 20%. And as long as it holds, that's probably all they're going to do. Mm. And let's hopefully you're one of those people that is a one and done cardioversion, and that's all you'll need for the next 20 years.
Mm.
I hope.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. And the calls keep coming. Mm. Headed to Bellevue now with Lee on the line. Good morning, Lee.
Hello, Lee in Bellevue. How can we help you?
Oh, stepped away from the phone.
Okay.
Hi there, Lee.
Lee, you got to speak to us.
Okay, you know what? We're going to put Lee back on hold and head to Des Moines with Don.
Hello,
on
Don.
The line. Hi there, Don.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We are doing well. How can we help you, sir?
I have a PRP question. I have made the decision to get additional PRP treatments. My question is, can they withdraw sufficient amounts of blood to, say, apply PRP to both my right and left shoulder? Or are they limited to... Is that a standard procedure? Well, I mean, my interest is saving money. I mean, would that be a factor in that decision?
Well, I mean, you only get then the one blood draw. They just draw extra tubes, and they put them in the device and spin them down and separate the PRP, and then they can inject it anywhere they want to inject it. So, my guess is that it is the facility and the physician time that is the bulk of your cost.
Mm.
You know, but you will probably save some modest amount by just getting a larger blood draw and, you know, getting more PRP to use at multiple sites.
And it's not uncommon, actually. Many people do that. They will. You know, if they're having issues with both joints, instead of doing them one at a time, they are offered both treatments at a lower price.
Yeah.
What about this? Two knees and two shoulders, or is that extreme?
Well, it's a fair bit, but, you know, you've got plenty of blood. Unless you're anemic, they should be able to draw out, you know, up to essentially a pint of blood if they need to. And usually the PRP, you're only injecting a couple of cc's, you know, a cc and a half, two cc's, depending on the joint, because there's limited space in the joints. So you don't have a lot of space. You can't pump in half a gallon.
Fill her up.
Fill her up, no. Yeah. We're not filling her up.
Well, you'll probably find, especially in things like the knees or elbows, it'll feel quite tight.
Mm.
When they first do the PRP, because they kind of put enough in to stretch out that joint capsule. And so the capsule will feel quite tight for a few hours at least until you reabsorb some of the extra fluid.
Right. And because it's your own body fluid, it'll resorb.
Yes, quite quickly.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much. That's very useful.
I think what you're proposing is very doable. It's just a matter of finding a compliant physician who's willing to do it. And my observation is, you know, I don't know who you're using, but I know Dr. Nelson tends to be very, very accommodating to this sort of thing.
Perfect. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Bye-bye. All right. Okay, we're going to try Lee again in Bellevue. Lee, are you there?
Lee, yes, speak to us.
Okay, hi there, Lee. How can we help? This is Leading Edge Medicine.
I had prostate cancer treatment, and then my naturopath said, well, I think you need to get the Greek test for other cancers that might be floating around in there.
Gallery test.
They can tell us which ones are active, and then they'll work up an antidote if you're willing to do that. And so I was wondering, what's your knowledge on what they call a Greek or an SOT, and how it compares to the gallery test?
SOT, this is something different.
Yeah, it is. Hmm. There's a variety of the new tests coming out.
Excuse me, just a moment. I put SOT in Perplexity, and it told me all about it and how long it lasts and all that kind of stuff.
All right. My point is that there's a fair number of these tests that are developing. The gallery was the first.
Mm.
But I don't know how many different tests the SOT is screening for now.
You know, Jerry, I don't know, but it was going to be a matter of time before other companies come out with other versions of their. The Greek was developed by the Research Genetic Cancer Center in Greece. That's why it's called the Greek test. But the formal name is Onconomics Plus. I don't actually know how many different types of cancer cells they look for. And, sir, you're saying that they develop an antidote for the treatment?
That's what I've been told, yes. And according to my research, it's good for about 6 months, and then they want to test you again to see how many of them it's killed, I guess, and if there's any that are still there.
So, again, it's pretty new. The SOT is supportive oligonucleotide therapy. That's SOT. And it's a personalized type of cancer therapy. So I know that they are starting to do this, especially in melanoma was the first case where they were able to kind of manage this, where they basically look at your own cancer cells, do some studies on the cancer cells. But remember, the big thing about this is once they put something back into you that's been personalized to you, they can't take it away. Then it's gone. And so they have to be very sure. I probably want to know who's doing it, how much they've done, what is the science behind this. How long ago was your prostate cancer?
February of this year.
And so
my PSA went from 4.2 to 0.8.
And what treatment did they give you?
It was radiation.
Okay. And so are you now considered cancer-free?
That's what they said. After a four-month follow-up, they were really impressed.
Good.
They didn't do any more testing.
Well, yeah, they follow up for at least 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because the further out you go, the less chance of reoccurrence. But reoccurrence can happen, you know, even years later.
Sure.
Although statistically, if you go out a year or two without reoccurrence, you're over the hump.
Right. It depends upon how old he was and also what was the stage. What was his Gleason score at the time? He said his PSA was 4.2, so.
Yeah, my Gleason score was low, and I'm 80, but I'm healthy.
Uh-huh. Okay, good.
I'm taking hormones.
Yeah, I don't know anything about a using the test to then develop a specific cocktail for your prostate cancer, though.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Yeah.
Well, that supposedly, excuse me, I'm sorry. I think it's the delay that supposedly they're not treating me for prostate. It'd be for some other cancers that. Cancer cells there floating around in the bloodstream.
All right.
Yeah. I don't know, Jerry.
Yeah, neither do I. I'm sorry we're going to have to kind of punt on this one. You know, I'm very familiar with the gallery test. I'm not nearly as familiar with what your I mean, the RGCC I'm vaguely familiar with, but as I said, they're developing a whole lot of these now. The gallery was first, and now everybody is kind of jumping into the game with their own variants. And I'm afraid I can't keep up with all of them at the same time.
Oh, wow.
What a great question.
I figured you're the most knowledgeable person I know. So
I know, right?
Yeah. Well, you see, there's one thing is my area of expertise is in the aging process. I'm not an oncologist.
Well, so, yeah, you know. Seems like the older we get, the more chance we have of cancer. So
sure,
yes,
ah, sure.
Yes, it is true. That is one of the common diseases of aging. So
okay,
all right. Well, thank you for the call, sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you for that, Lee. All right. And with that, we have just a minute or so left of our program. Dr. Umat, could you give us the details? We do have our gallery test, and that's coming up here in just a few weeks, but you do have to make an appointment.
That's right. September 14th is the day, and it's from 9 to 1 in all three clinics, and it is a blood draw. There is a charge of $995. By the way, this is the new low price.
Yes,
it's the lowest price we have offered for the test. And even if you have done the test before, I think it's time to consider doing it again because you want to make sure you're picking up any new cancer signals that might be coming up. So the test is available to all anybody who's listening or hears about it through posts or through advertising. It is not restricted to longevity patients. Longevity patients can do this test anytime. We are opening up September the 14th for all non-longevity patients who are interested in knowing about their personal risk for cancer. So this is where you come, and the test is $995. And then if you're interested in doing our longevity blood panel, that's $595. And then you can get 1.5 hour of physician time to review your test results.
All right. Very good. Thank you for that. Wow. Lots of topics today and lots of phone calls. We welcome your calls. That's enough. That's our time is up for today, but we invite you to join us again. We will be live in the studio Labor Day weekend, and perhaps you'll be able to see us as well as hear us on Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great rest of your day. If you'd like to sign up to become a patient at Longevity or to take that free health analysis test or to sign up for the gallery test on Saturday, September 14th, here is that number to call. It's 1-866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. You can also go to our website, lmclinic.com. Have a great rest of your weekend. Stay dry. And we'll be back next week right here on Leading Edge Medicine.